Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, I'm joined by ACS Chief Executive James Lohman.
Hi.
And ACS Research Manager Katie Cross.
Hi.
To talk about one of the most important things that we produce every year, and that's the 2019 Local Shop Report. We're recording this on the eve of the report launch, getting the final touches together on everything ahead of our trip up to the National Space Centre in Leicester. And who knows, maybe some of you are listening. Maybe you're doing so on your way to Leicester for the launch as well, whether that be in the car or on the train on the way up or down to there. So we imagine that most people listening will have come in contact with the Local Shop Report at some point since we started producing it in 2012. But for anyone who's never heard of the Local Shop Report, James, I guess what's the elevator pitch? In brief, what is the report and what's it for? Why do we do it?
Yeah, not sure it's quite the elevator pitch. The reasons why we do it is that when we're talking to government and we talk across loads of issues, as people know, and we talk in the media, and we just felt that we were giving a lot of opinion about issues. We were reflecting what our members were saying, but we didn't necessarily have really strong data to share with those policymakers. And we realised how much more persuasive we would be and how much more credible we would be if we could tell not just stories, but give some facts. And so, best part of 10 years ago now, we started doing the Local Shop Report, and that was really the purpose behind it. So it allows us to give that that anatomy of the sector, allows us to explain what's happening in the sector on any given issue. There's always a stat in the Local Shop Report, which we can use to help talk to government. And it's also been great talking in the sector, talking in the media, talking more broadly and widely about what our sector is and having the data to support that, really. So it's really about that evidence base about many of the things that we already feel we know, but we can then support that. And we do find out some new stuff as well, which we'll come on to, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Local Shop Report first couple of years was very quickly taken on by the sector, wasn't it? We thought everyone knows this stuff, and actually they don't. And so that's why it's really useful. And I also remember pre-Local Shop Report days getting asked by government officials on a variety of things, what do you think? And the answer was, well, we think about this. Whereas now, probably 99 times out of 100, we say, well, this is what retailers are telling us, which is really powerful.
Yeah, and it goes alongside our Voice of Local Shops quarterly surveys, our colleague survey and community barometer and all the other work we do, crime survey. So it all comes together and much of that information's in here. But yeah, it makes a huge difference day to day.
And Katie, you've done all the actual work on the report this year, and you've led a lot of the change in the tone compared to previous years. Can you give us a bit about the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, so this year we've really tried to focus on who we are as a sector, what we contribute and why we are so important. And I think with the tone, what we've tried to do is take like the human-centred approach. We've tried to think about it in terms of the people who are actually working in the stores, the people that are owning and running the stores, the communities they serve, the customers they serve as well. So for example, the jobs page last year would have just said jobs. Now it's about our colleagues who actually works there and what that means for them. So kind of taking that kind of approach.
And I guess that's the big point of difference, isn't it, between us and other sectors, is that we have, you know, as we get onto some of the stats, we have 400,000 people that are there providing a service. And you know, that sets us apart from a lot of other types of business.
Yeah, and I say this every year, I look at the results and I just think it is really impressive when you bring it all together.
Mm. So looking at the report as a whole then, without getting into every single statistic and bit of data in the report, what does it tell us about the convenience sector today and how stores are being run at the moment?
Okay, this, you're asking me that, and the thing that always comes out to me is about the locations where we operate.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm obsessed by this, but I think it's really, really interesting because what sets us apart as a sector isn't just the number of shops, there's 46,388 of them, but it's about where they trade in those sorts of communities. So there are loads of, particularly, I'm talking about villages and housing estates around the country, where the only service that's left, or the anchor for a small range of services, is the convenience store. And so I'm always fascinated by the neighbouring businesses stat that we have in here towards the front of the report. We talk about, are you isolated? Are you trading alongside other businesses on a small parade, on a larger parade or secondary high street, or on a main high street or city centre? And we ask retailers that very consistently now. It's over three quarters, about 80% this year, are either isolated or on a small parade. And that, to me, says everything about locations where we operate. We're in those secondary areas where other services aren't. And that means we sort of absorbed all the specialist services that may once have operated in those locations. We're relevant to the debate about housing and where people are going to live and those communities that are being developed. Really, all of these places where people are living, the convenience store is their touch point in that community, which is also backed up by the data on community services and what's valued and so on, which I won't get into now. So, you know, that whole thing about location I find really fascinating.
And Katie, what stands out to you about the report this year about the way that retailers are going about their business?
I think for me, again, it comes back to the jobs numbers. I think it's a really impressive stat. So we employ around 405,000 people. And I think it's interesting, not just because the number of people we employ, but about what it is they like about working in the sector as well. So as part of our research this year, we do our colleague survey and we ask people what they like most about working in the sector. And they tell us it's about interacting with the customers, interacting with other colleagues in the store, but also the location of where they work as well. And I think it's that sociable nature of the job that we provide. People who don't want to sit behind a desk, they want to be helping people and interacting with people. And I think that's a really important point as well in terms of how stores are run. The people they are actually employing in terms of giving a good customer experience, but also that personal element that they are employing those people to do as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we've talked for a few years about impact on things like employment costs going up and stores having to make difficult decisions about cutting back. And compared to that, we see potential rises in things like self-service tills and things to make stores more efficient and less of a burden for staff. But I think actually what we're seeing in the report now is, and disagree with me if you like, but I think we're seeing people recognising that actually what colleagues are there to do in terms of adding value is not necessarily just stacking shelves. It's talking to people, it's interacting with customers, it's providing that value that, you know, has you know, a huge impact when it comes to things like loneliness, when it comes to things like positive impact that are elsewhere in the report as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it ties in really well with the breadth of services that stores are offering. So every year we say there's just such a range of services that we're offering. And part of that comes with needing a really good quality staff as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we tend not to talk about trends over time too much, and we have a bit of a disclaimer and say this is a snapshot for the year, it's not necessarily comparable to previous years, I'm just going to go against everything I've just said and ask both of you, is there anything in the report this year that surprises you because it has changed, or I guess even surprises you because it hasn't changed?
I mean, I'm going to come back to jobs just because we've talked about it being a very impressive number of people we're employing, but actually we've seen an increase this year in the number of people that are employed.
Yeah.
And I think when we first thought about this, we thought this could be potentially surprising because of the increase in national living and national minimum wage rates. So if anything, we might have expected it to go down. But I think the fact that we've also seen increases in the services that retailers are offering, you know, you can't keep cutting the number of people they're employing. And from our National Living Wage Survey, we know that people are mitigating wage costs in other areas, such as taking on more hours themselves, reducing the number of hours that staff are working, and increasing product costs. But I think overall it's a really interesting balance in terms of the number of staff that people have whilst also trying to mitigate the costs. I think that's kind of one of the interesting, perhaps surprising stats from this year.
Yeah, I mean, you could even have someone who's had two full-time staff that now has replaced that with four part-time staff, and they've in that process still made a saving in their employment costs. So I suppose the job numbers are a decent proxy, but they don't, as you just said, they don't tell the whole story, do they?
Yeah, absolutely. And this year, I mean, it's one to watch out for. I wouldn't say it was a trend yet. It's something we've only really seen this year, but the percentage who are aged 16 to 24 went up slightly.
Course.
So perhaps maybe people are employing slightly younger members of staff who actually would have a lower rate of pay. So maybe that might be something to consider.
That's the reason we do that, isn't it? It was, say 24, because at 25, then the full national living wage applies. Yeah. James, anything surprises you this year?
Yeah. So this whole debate around food, you know, our sector, are we food retailers in our sector? And in many ways, we are. We sit as local food shops and present ourselves in that way. But actually, looking at the stats about what we sell, a lot of it isn't food, actually. And there's a bit of a mixed picture here, and two things that I don't think are contradictory, but are really important dynamics. You know, firstly, the growth of particularly hot food, fresh food, particularly for independents, the growth of the amount they're selling is not significant. You know, it is creeping up very, very slowly. But what is happening every year, and it certainly happened this year again, more so, is the investment in the hardware around providing food, and particularly food to go in store, more coffee machines, more kitchens, food preparation areas in store, etc., in-store bakeries, things like that. So I think we're seeing that investment happen, and I think maybe the sector is splitting ever more clearly between those who fundamentally do see themselves as food retailers and those who really aren't. And there's nothing wrong with either of those approaches, by the way, but we're seeing more, I think, more differentiation between stores, and it's almost like you have to commit to investing in that hardware to be any good at it.
So what I was going to say is it feels like food service and convenience stores and food to go is something you can't play at. You've either got to do it properly and really invest, or it's probably not worth it because you're not going to have that level of trust.
Chilled as well, much more generally. You know, so in investment, again, the biggest investment is in refrigeration. But again, you can't play at that. You know, if you've got a chilled capacity and a product range and a presentation of that product range, which means that people will feed themselves and their families from your store, then you're a food retailer. If they won't, you're sort of not. You might be doing a bit of impulse, and that's great, but you're not really in that, playing in that space. So I think the Local Shop Report really adds some useful information to this debate around our sector and food.
And also, I think retailers have to think about the kind of retailer that they want to be. They've got so much choice in what service they do offer that they have to think what their specific area really needs.
Yeah, and we allude to that a little bit in the community section as well, don't we, about other services and what else do you want to be seen as? What do you want to be affiliated to? Okay, well, so there's a lot of new information in this year's report, in addition to some of the things that we've been building on for a number of years. Some of the new information in this year's report looks at the way that stores receive products and also the additional space that they have in store beyond just the sales area. And this is especially timely because, we don't have a sound effect on the podcast yet, but if we had a Brexit klaxon, I would be pressing the button furiously now. This is especially timely because of the looming threat of no deal on the horizon. As of recording, that might have changed by the time this has gone out. There's only a few hours in between, but you never know. James, what issues does this highlight, especially, I guess, for independent retailers?
Yeah, so the key thing is lack of space. So we see this all the time in these study tours, and we see it all the time that, you know, convenience stores dedicate as much of the premises as they can to sales space for all sorts of obvious reasons. So 23% of independent retailers have no additional space outside the store. Half of them, it's less than 500 square feet. Slightly more space around multiple stores. That might include staff rooms, toilets, as well as storage areas. Multiple stores, which are, you know, just over half, have less than 1,000 square feet of space. So the point is, there's not much space to store additional products. If retailers choose to do that and make a calculation, they want to do that ahead of, you know, changes in supply and potential changes in patterns of demand around a no-deal Brexit, or indeed for any other sorts of reasons, weather or other things like that. So that really brings it home just how, you know, just-in-time supply isn't just an advantage in our sector, it's an absolute necessity. And that's backed up as well by the information on how retailers get products. So, and common sense finding here that some retailers get delivered products only, some retailers go to cash and carries only, and quite a few do both. Which, you know, we all know, but the research backs that up from talking to independent retailers. So one of the advantages that we do have is that plurality of supply, which means that we can cover for problems with supply should they emerge, maybe slightly better than those who are locked into just one supply chain.
And we know as well that from the consumer side of things, with that, some other new data from Google this year, that when consumers are in distress, they're looking for the convenience store near them that might be open 24 hours, that, you know, they need something right now. And that's, you know, an interesting dynamic, the one relying on that just-in-time delivery and the other one, you know, I need it right now. So in times of trouble, that is an interesting balance to strike.
It's very much reflected in the data because the most common time of year that convenience stores are searched on Google is the week of Christmas, when people are at their most panicky.
Okay, well, we could go on for another couple of hours talking about the different parts of the report, but that's why we're holding an event. And this is really the first, is a sort of a taster for the Local Shop Report. The first in a series of podcasts. The second will hopefully, technology permitting, feature a live recording in the panel session at the launch event, which we're really looking forward to. We've got Amit Shingadia, Graham Salt, Victoria Lockie, and Amit Puntenbecker that are talking at the panel there, which will be great. And then next week, I'll be going across to the University of Oxford to speak to John Jonathan Reynolds at Side Business School about what the report can tell us about convenience stores in the wider context of retail, high street shopping, which I'm really looking forward to because anything Jonathan doesn't know about retail probably isn't worth knowing. In the meantime, though, we hope you find the report useful. Please download it from the website or come and get a hard copy from us. If you haven't got it in front of you already, you can download it now at acs.org.uk.